Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Thursday, October the 28th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, President Biden on Build Back Better. Today, it was announced that there had been a formulation of an agreement to have a so-called bipartisan bill and an initiative to make sure that the bill would be on the road to being passed. And that was after President Biden had unveiled the Build Back Better agenda. It's not that he had unveiled it for the first time, but what you're going to hear in this episode is from the president himself as he outlines and articulates just exactly what this means. It's a significant day, and I'll talk about it, as will President Biden, right after this. Welcome back. Dear listener, thank you very much. It's Thursday. Oh my God, Thursday. Oh my God, it's Thursday. We are coming to the end of another week, and we are coming to the end of the month of October. We are just a few days away from that. So, my goodness me, it's just incredible how this year has vanished. But I have to say, for many people, it has not been the greatest 2021, and I'm sure people are just absolutely buzzing to get through the end of the next couple of months and these last few days of October before turning over a brand new leaf and a brand new calendar year to start. I hope that whatever your year has been like this year, that it does improve and that you see the things in the following year that you didn't see or did not envision this year. Now, of course, I'll be saying that to you at least one more time before the end of 2021, but I wanted to get an early start at it now. President Joe Biden has gotten an early start with Build Back Better. It was one of the main themes of his presidential election campaign, or I should say his presidential run, his run to the presidency in 2020. Build Back Better was the emphasis, and so far, he has made a lot of strides toward that in his first year in office as president. Today, it was announced, as through President Biden, that this was really going to get going. Speaker Pelosi also held a press conference shortly thereafter to talk about the implementation of this particular bill, which has now had some kind of accord and is going to get passed following markups in committee. And that is exactly what is going to be happening throughout the balance of this day. The House Budget Committee will do its markups, its discussion about the bill, its comment about the monies involved. I think it's around $1.5 billion or maybe trillion. I forget what now, you know. Yesterday I think I had said that this is all about having 1.5 billion. It might be billions. The B's and T's, you know, billions, trillions. I mean, it does make a difference, and certainly when it comes to budgets, what goes on with this. But Build Back Better is about infrastructure. It's about revitalizing the United States in terms of its infrastructure, about its way of conducting everyday life and the ways of transportation, clean energy, all of these things. And I'm going to turn the floor over shortly to President Biden to just explain all of this, or at least talk about it, because we need to be aware of these things. And I think one of the good things that President Biden has done, he's done some good things this year. I've criticized him about the things that have not been so good, but he's done some positive things this year. And I think this administration has done some positive things here in 2021. And one of them, even on a more cosmetic level, if you don't mind me saying, is that he has gone out and about across the country along with Vice President Kamala Harris and other officials to talk about Build Back Better, to talk about the kinds of triumphs that this administration has accomplished for the United States of America, for people in this country. I have seen it. I've noticed that they have made a much better effort as opposed to previous administrations in the Democratic Party side to communicate their triumphs and their accomplishments. President Obama was notoriously bad at this. He did not message at all very well about the accomplishments that he and his administration had achieved. He was much more reticent to do so, which I think is a really strange thing. But President Biden, thank goodness, is not. He will tell you what he's done and what he hasn't done. He will be very clear about it. And I think the Biden administration has done a much better job thus far in telling people, everyday people in the United States, what they have accomplished. Because you know, I've talked about this a billion times, the corporate news media in the United States is not going to do that. And I'm not asking for the corporate news media to be a stenographer. I don't want that. But can you at least report what the administration is doing and not on whether a progressive is upset at some moderates in the Democratic Party and ignore these Republicans? I mean, I said this yesterday. Can you report on the actual substance of the issues for once? This is why, one of the reasons why I think President Biden and the Biden administration have done a good job trying to jump out ahead of the media and cutting through all the media noise and all the fantasy horse race stuff that I dramatized in yesterday's episode. You have to listen back to that. I did this whole horse race imitation of what the corporate news media in large part in the United States is doing. Their approach to all of the serious issues is to describe it as if it's some kind of Kentucky Derby event. And that is not the way politics should be covered. And one of the things I think the Biden administration and President Biden certainly recognizes is that you have to get out there and tell the American public what it is you're doing and what it means and what it means to them. Because if you don't do that, you will allow the media to do it for you. And you will allow these rusty criminal Republicans to do it for you. Because it is always true that the people who scream the loudest and the most incorrect and the most false and untrue are the ones that get all the airtime. That's the way the media covers things in this country, as it does in other countries, in some other countries, certainly in the UK. I can scream and shout and tell you a bunch of lies, doesn't matter, but as long as I'm screaming and shouting, I'm going to have a camera on me. Whereas if I'm telling the truth, and I'm telling it like this, no one's going to pay attention. So you have to get out there, speak a little bit louder, but also explain to people what it is the things you have accomplished are and what they mean to the people who are watching you. Speak about them. And in that tradition, what I'm going to do right now is turn the floor over to President Biden. President Joe Biden, who earlier today outlined exactly what the United States public can expect from Build Back Better. What this bill, when it is passed through the House, is going to mean, and then through the Senate, what it's going to mean. This is very important. So for the next 20 minutes, you're going to hear from President Joe Biden. These next 22 minutes, I think it is. But you are going to be able to hear from him as he expresses and explains to you exactly what this is going to mean. This is very important. Would I have liked it to be more than a million and a half, a trillion and a half, or a billion and a half? Absolutely. I think there is more to build on with Build Back Better, but this is just the start of it, And I think it is a very positive and important thing. And this is something that the Democratic Party and all of the candidates running for these offices, whether they are running for dog catcher or whether they're running for United States Senate, whether local or state or federal office, this is something that Democratic Party politicians running or trying to retain their seats or trying to enter politics for the first time, they have got to explain these accomplishments and they've got to start trumpeting, if you will, for lack of a better term. They need to amplify, that is a better term, they need to amplify these accomplishments and what Build Back Better means and what it means in the state or the city that the constituents that they represent or want to represent, what it means to them. Okay? This, right now, please listen to this. I think it's very important. This is Build Back Better, and this is President Joe Biden talking about it earlier today.
After months of tough and thoughtful negotiations, I think we have an historic, I know we have a historic economic framework. It's a framework that will create millions of jobs, grow the economy, invest in our nation and our people, turn the climate crisis into an opportunity and put us on a path not only to compete, but to win the economic competition for the 21st century against China and every other major country in the world. It's fiscally responsible. It's fully paid for. 17 Nobel Prize winners in economics have said it will lower the inflationary pressures on the economy. And over the next 10 years, it will not add to the deficit at all. It will actually reduce the deficit, according to economists. I want to thank my colleagues in the Congress for their leadership. We spent hours and hours and hours over months and months working on this. No one got everything they wanted, including me. But that's what compromise is. That's consensus. And that's what I ran on. I've long said compromise and consensus are the only way to get big things done in a democracy, important things done for the country. I know it's hard. I know how deeply people feel about the things that they fight for. But this framework includes historic investments in our nation and in our people. Any single element of this framework would be viewed as a fundamental change in America. Taken together, they're truly consequential. I'll have more to say after I return from the critical meetings in Europe this week, but for now, let me lay out a few points. First, we face, and I know I apologize for saying this again, we face an inflection point as a nation. For most of the 20th century, we led the world by a significant margin because we invested in our people, not only in our roads and our highways and our bridges, but in our people, in our families. We didn't just build an interstate highway system. We built a highway to the sky. We invested to win the space race, and we won. We're also among the first to provide access to free education for all Americans, beginning back in the late 1800s. That decision alone to invest in our children and their families was a major part of why we were able to lead the world for much of the 20th century. But somewhere along the way, we stopped investing in ourselves, investing in our people. America is still the largest economy in the world. We still have the most productive workers and most innovative minds in the world. But we've risked losing our edge as a nation. Our infrastructure used to be rated the best in the world. Today, according to the World Economic Forum, we rank 13th in the world. We used to lead the world in educational achievement. Now the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development ranks America 35th out of the 37 major countries when it comes to investing in early childhood education and care. We know how our children start impacts significantly on how they'll finish. We can't be competitive in the 21st century global economy if we continue this slide. That's what I've said all along. We need to build America from the bottom up and the middle out, not from the top down, with the trickle-down economics that's always failed us. I can't think of a single time when the middle class has done well that the wealthy haven't done very well. I think of many times, including now, when the wealthy, the super wealthy, do very well, and the middle class don't do well. That's why I propose the investments Congress is now considering in two critical pieces of legislation. Positions I ran on as president, positions I announced when I laid out in a joint session of Congress what my economic agenda was. These are not about left versus right, or moderate versus progressive, or anything else that pits Americans against one another. This is about competitiveness versus complacency. Competitiveness versus complacency. It's about expanding opportunity, not opportunity denied. It's about leading the world or letting the world pass us by. Today, with my Democratic colleagues, we have a framework for my Build Back Better initiative. And here's how it will fundamentally change the lives of millions of people for the better. Millions of you are in the so-called sandwich generation who feel financially squeezed by raising a child and caring for an aging parent. About 820,000 seniors in America and people with disabilities have applied for Medicaid, and they're on a waiting list right now to get home care. They need some help. They don't have to be kicked out of their homes. But they need a little help getting around, having their meals made occasionally for them. They don't want to put them in nursing homes, not because of the cost, but because it's a matter of dignity. They want to stay in their homes. But it's hard. You're just looking for an answer so your parents can keep living independently with dignity. For millions of families in America, this issue is the most important issue they're facing. It's personal. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to expand services for seniors so families can get help from well-trained, well-paid professionals to help them take care of their parents at home, to cook meals for them, to get their groceries for them, to help them get around, to help them live in their own home with the dignity they deserve to be afforded. Quite frankly, what we found is that this is more popular, or as popular as anything else we're proposing, because the American people understand the need. It's a matter of dignity and pride for our parents. 30 years ago, we ranked number 7 among the advanced economies in the world as a share of women working. You know where we are today? We rank 23rd. 23rd, 7 to 23. Once again, our competitors are investing, and we're standing still. Today, there are nearly 2 million women in America not working today simply because they can't afford childcare. Typical family spends about $11,000 a year on childcare. Some states, it's $14,500 a year per child. We're going to make sure nearly all families earning less than $300,000 a year will pay no more than 7% of their income for childcare. And for a family making $100,000 a year, that will save them more than $5,000 in childcare. This is a fundamental game changer for families and for our economy, as more parents, especially women, can get back to work and work in the workforce. I'm looking at a lot of significant press people in front of me. A lot of them are working mothers. They know what it costs. I remember when I got to the Senate, I lost my wife and daughter in an accident, my two boys. I started commuting 250 miles a day because I had my mom and my dad and my brother and my sister to help me take care of my kids because I couldn't afford childcare, and I was getting a serious salary, $42,000 a year. We've also extended the historic middle-class tax cut. That's what I call it, middle tax cut for parents. That is the expanded child tax credit we passed through the American Rescue Plan. What that means is, for folks at home, they're getting $300 a month for every child under the age of 6, $250 for every child under the age of 18. We're extending that for another year. The money is already a life changer for so many working families. This will help cut child poverty in half this year, according to experts. But that's not all it does. It changes the whole dynamic for working parents. In the past, if you paid taxes and had a good income, you could deduct, under the tax code, $2,000 per child from the taxes you owed. But how many families do you know a cashier, waiters, healthcare workers, who never got the benefit of the full tax break because they didn't have that much to deduct. And it wasn't refundable. So it either came off your tax bill or you didn't get full credit. Why should have somebody making $500,000 a year, or $150,000, or $200,000 a year, get to write it off their taxes? And the people who need the help even more, they don't have that much tax to pay. They don't get the benefit, and they have the same cost of raising their children. 80% of those left out were working parents who just didn't make enough money. That's why in the American Rescue Plan, we didn't just expand the amount of the middle class tax cut. We also made it refundable. This framework will make it permanently refundable, making sure that the families who need it get a full credit for it, in addition to those who are already getting full credit. They're going to make sure that every 3- and 4-year-old child in America will go to high-quality preschool. That's part of the legislation I just brought up to the Congress. Studies show that when we put 3- and 4-year-olds in school, not daycare, we increase by up to 47% the chance that that child, no matter what their background, will be able to earn a college degree. As my wife Jill is in the back here, we always says, any country that out-educates us is going to out-compete us. We can finally take us from 12 years to 14 years of universal education in America. We also make investments in higher education by increasing Pell Grants to help students from lower-income families attend community colleges and four-year schools. And we invest in historically black universities, colleges and universities, HBCUs, minority-serving institutions, and tribal colleges to make sure every young student has a shot at a good-paying job in the future. This framework extends tax credits to lower premiums for folks who are in the Affordable Care Act for another 3 years. For 4 million folks in the 12 states that haven't expanded Medicaid, all the rest have, this framework will enable you to get affordable coverage. And Medicare will now cover the cost of hearing aids and hearing checkups. This framework also makes the most significant investment to deal with the climate crisis ever happened, beyond any other advanced nation in the world. Over 1 billion metric tons of emission reductions, at least 10 times bigger on climate than any bill that has ever passed before, and enough to position us for a 50 to 52% emission reductions by the year 2030. And we'll do it in ways that grow the domestic industries, create good-paying union jobs, address long-standing environmental injustices as well. Tax credits help people do things like weatherize their homes so they use less energy, install solar panels and develop clean energy products, and help business produce more clean energy. And when paired with the bipartisan infrastructure bill, we'll truly transform this nation. Historic investments in passenger rail. I know everybody says, oh, Biden's a rail guy. That's true. But passenger rail and freight rail and public transit, it's going to take hundreds of thousands of vehicles off the road, saving millions of barrels of oil. Everybody knows, all the studies show, if you can get from point A to point B on electric rail, you won't drive your car. You'll take the rail service. We also learned that in most major cities in America, minority populations, the jobs they used to have in town, they're now out of town. Roughly 60% of the folks, they don't have vehicles, so they need to have a means to get out of town, to their jobs, to be on time. This will do that, like it did for Detroit. 95% of the 840,000 school buses in America run on diesel. Every day, more than 25 million children and thousands of bus drivers breathe polluted air on the way to and from school from the diesel exhaust. We're going to replace thousands of these with electric school buses that have big batteries underneath and that are good for the climate. I went down to one of the manufacturing facilities, saw them, got in one, drive them. They do not expend any pollution into the air. will build out the first ever national network of 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations all across the country. So when you buy an electric vehicle and you get credit for buying it, and you buy an electric vehicle, you go all the way across America on a single tank of gas, figuratively speaking. It's not gas. You plug it in. 500,000 of them. These stations along the way. We're going to get off the sidelines on manufacturing solar panels and wind farms and electric vehicles with targeted manufacturing credits. You manufacture, you get them a credit for doing it. These will help grow the supply chains in communities too often left behind. And we're going to reward countries for paying good wages for companies, I should say, for good wages and for sourcing their materials from here in the United States. That means tens of millions of panels and turbines, doubling the number of electric vehicles we have on the road within just 3 years. We'll be able to sell and export these products and technologies to the rest of the world and creating thousands more jobs because we are once again going to be the innovators. We'll also make historic investments in environmental cleanup and remediation. That means putting people to work in good paying jobs at prevailing wage, capping hundreds of thousands of abandoned wells and gas wells, oil and gas wells, that need to be capped because they are leaking things that hurt the air. Putting a stop to the methane leaks and the pipelines, protecting the health of our communities. It's a big deal. And we'll build up our resilience for the next superstorm, drought, wildfires, and hurricanes that represent a blinking code red for America and the world. Last year alone, these types of extreme weather events you've all been covering and you've all witnessed and some of you have been caught in the middle of have caused $99 billion in damage to the United States within the last year. $99 billion. And we're not spending any money to deal with this. It's costing us significantly. In Pittsburgh, I met an IBW electrical worker who climbs up on those power lines in the middle of a storm to try to put transformers in to keep the lights on when storms hit. He calls himself 100% union guy. His job's dangerous. As he said, I quote, "I don't want my kids growing up in a world where the threat of climate change hangs over their heads," end of quote. Folks, we all have that obligation to our children and to our grandchildren. The bipartisan infrastructure bill is also the most significant investment since we built the interstate highway system and won the space race decades ago. This is about rebuilding the arteries of our economy. Across the country now, there are 45,000 bridges and 173,000 miles of roads that are in poor condition. Some of the bridges you don't even take a chance of going across. They're shut down. It can't be built back to the same standard because the weather's not going to get a lot better. We just got to keep from getting a heck of a lot worse. We have to build back better and stronger. No one should have to hold their breath as they cross a rundown bridge or a dangerous intersection in their hometown. We're going to put hardworking Americans on the job to bring our infrastructure up to speed. Good union jobs and prevailing wages. Jobs you can raise a family on. My dad would say you could have a little breathing room. Jobs that can't be outsourced. Jobs replacing lead water pipes so families can drink clean water. Improving the health of our children and putting plumbers and pipe fitters to work. Jobs laying thousands of miles of transmission lines to build a modern energy grid. Jobs making a high-speed internet affordable and available everywhere in rural and urban America. Particularly including the 35% of rural America that goes without it right now. This pandemic has made clear the need for affordable and available high-speed internet. The idea of a parent having to put their kids in a car for virtual learning, drive and sit in a McDonald's parking lot so the child can access the internet when school is taught virtually is not only unnecessary, it's just wrong. It's wrong. As I said before, these plans are fiscally responsible. They are fully paid for. They don't add a single penny to the deficit. They don't raise taxes on anyone making less than $400,000 a year. In fact, they reduce the deficit. Here's how. I don't want to punish anyone's success. I'm a capitalist. I want everyone to be able to, if they want to be a millionaire or billionaire, to be able to seek their goal. But all I'm asking is, pay your fair share. Pay your fair share. Pay your fair share. And right now, many of them are paying virtually nothing. Last year, the 55 most profitable corporations in America, 55 of them, paid zero in federal income tax on about $40 billion in profit. If they report big profits to their shareholders, they should be paying taxes. It's that simple. That's why the Build Back Better framework will have a 15% minimum on the largest corporations, a minimum tax of 15%. The top 1% of the wealthiest Americans evade, it's estimated by the experts, $160 billion a year in federal taxes. That's wrong. We're going to change that. I want to emphasize what I said from the beginning. Under my plans, if you earn less than $400,000, you won't pay a single penny more in federal taxes, period. In fact, these bills continue cutting taxes for middle class, for child care, for health care, so much more. Let me close with this. For much too long, working people of this nation, in the middle class of this country, have been dealt out of the American deal. It's time to deal them back in. I ran for president saying it was time to reduce the burden on the middle class, to rebuild the backbone of this nation, working people and the middle class. I couldn't have been any clearer from the very moment I announced my candidacy. That's why I wrote these bills in the first place and took them to the people. I campaigned on them, and the American people spoke. This agenda, the agenda that's in these bills, is what 81 million Americans voted for. More people voted than any time in American history. That's what they voted for. Their voices deserve to be heard, not denied, or worse, ignored. Because here's what I know. If we make these investments, there will be no stopping the American people or America. We will own the future. I've long said it's never been a good bet to bet against the American people. I've said that to foreign leaders as well as everyone here in this country, which means it's always a good bet to bet on the American people. Just give them half a chance. And that's what we're doing. That's what these plans do. They're about betting on America, about believing in America, about believing in the capacity of the American people. If you look at the history of the journey of this nation, what becomes crystal clear is this. I'll say it again. Given half a chance, the American people have never, ever, ever, ever let the country down. So let's get this done. God bless you all, and may God protect your troops, and I'll see you in Italy and in Scotland. Thank you.
That was President Biden earlier today. And look, from the White House, I think it was in the East Room, with Vice President Harris actually standing behind him, standing sentry every time. It's great that he does include Vice President Harris. And I do think, even though I do think she's been hamstrung a little bit by President Biden, you know, being given, look, let's put it this way. The vice presidential role is a largely thankless role in politics. It really is. I mean, you're waiting to become the number one, if you will. And I don't mean it in that crude sense, in terms of waiting for someone to kick the bucket. No. I'm just saying that you really are someone who is largely ineffectual, although you can have influence in some places and you can have a great deal of power. We saw that with Dick Cheney, who was really the president, wasn't he? That's not even a conspiracy theory. That's actually kind of true. Come on now, everybody knows Dick Cheney was calling the shots. He's the one that picked himself as the vice presidential candidate for George W. You don't believe me? Check it out. Don't pay any... Listen, if you don't... Listen, everything I say is based on fact. And if I make a mistake here, dear listener, I will correct it. Of course, you know, I mean, I, to the state that I know that I'm making a mistake, because I pretty much do go back and check to see that I have said something correctly. And if I haven't, I make every attempt to correct it. Certainly that episode, or in an episode down the road, not too far away. But Dick Cheney picked himself for the presidential, when they were doing the vice presidential exploratory campaign, who's going to be my pick? Dick Cheney ended up picking himself. And he wielded unprecedented power as a vice president. More than any other vice president I can think of in recent memory. I'm not even talking about Spiro Agnew, who was a downright criminal under Richard Nixon. Criminals and criminals together. United together. I'm talking about a very, and Cheney's one of them too. I mean, very powerful Cheney was. But Vice President Harris has been given, I think, some very pretty much thankless tasks. No experience in half of these things. And she's put out there to do the kinds of things that, well, anyway. The point of the matter is that I do like that President Biden does include her to come out. And she stands there, and I sometimes wonder if she's being a security guard for him instead of being the vice president. But no, I do respect Vice President Kamala Harris. I got to meet her a number of years ago, just a couple of years ago now, when she was running for president in the very same election year. And it was actually in 2019 that I met her. Because, of course, here, when you start your presidential campaign, you start at least 3.5 years before the election. But no, you start it 2+ years before. We need to change that, by the way. But I got to meet her. She couldn't have been a nicer person to meet, really. And I think she's genuine. She was absolutely genuine. But Vice President Harris was there standing sentry behind President Biden as he just spoke the words you just heard. And you can hear the commitment. I do believe that President Biden, although he may be some things that we have read and heard and learned, one thing he is about as well is a measure of earnestness not just in his speeches about these things, but also in his beliefs about these things. I do think, honestly, that he does believe in revitalizing the middle class and revitalizing the working class. I do honestly think that Joe Biden as president, or as a human being, he actually believes in that, I think. I just wish that we wouldn't be so easy to compromise. Because the Republican Party does not compromise anything. They don't give a rat's, right? They will tell you, no, we're not having any more debate. We're not having any more debate about voting. We're not even going to vote to debate it. We're going to go, no. No discussion about the Voting Rights Act. They'd have no compunction. They have no compunction at all in telling you that, as they've done this year. Just a few days ago they did this. They have no compunction to say, no, we're not having a debate over whether to have a Senate committee on investigating the terrorist attack of January 6th, 2021. No, we're not even going to vote to have a debate. In fact, we're going to vote to have no debate at all. And that's exactly what they did a few months ago. No, only 5 or 6 police killed, 6 people killed, 7 or 8 people killed. Oh, no, we're not doing that. 147 of us, we're traitors and we voted against the certification of these results. No, we don't recognize it. But, we're not having any investigation. And half the people in the Senate, it seems, in the Republican side, a good dozen of them totally voted against certification of these results, against the certification. 9 Republican senators. And I talked about this earlier last week. Who voted against these results. No, we're not recognizing it. And they're all still in the United States Senate. Is there any wonder these Republicans who have voted, no, we're not doing any debates on a committee for investigating January 6th. Is there any wonder why they said that when they've got 8 or 9 of their colleagues who actually were actively involved in trying to subvert any notion of democracy? Some of them were at that terroristic rally just before they committed the terrorist attack. Some of them were involved in this. Some of the House members, it's come out this week Or last week that Paul Gosar, the House member, Republican from, I think it was Arizona, Andy Biggs, another one. I forget where he's from. He's a Republican. And these folks were actively involved and discussing things with the terrorists. This is just right in your face. Oh, but anyway, lest I continue to digress. But that speech from President Biden, I thought was very important. It's one of a number of very important speeches he's given this year. And we've got to shine light on these times when government officials, particularly the ones we vote for, in this case, or one I voted for, President Biden, does do something positive and good. And I'm going to continue to do that because I think this year, President Biden has done much more good than not. Certainly, I am not happy with the voting rights situation. Certainly, I'm not happy with the dropping the bombs on Syria. Certainly, I'm not happy with some of the other things. But the vast majority of everything else, I think he's got right. I think he's trying to make the country safer and more stable. I think he is making an effort, along with this administration, to do these things. I wish the Justice Department did a bit more, but so far I think they're certainly heading in the direction they should be heading in. I want them to be more proactive and more dynamic. But they are all moving in the direction that we voted for, which was in a positive, progressive direction. Even if the people who run these things aren't the most progressive people, they're not in the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. But I think one of the things that the big tent of the Democratic Party really does say to you is that while I personally would love to have actual progressives, real progressives, not these people who say they're progressive and then in the back room they go stab you in the back with these deals that they do with people who don't have anything to do with progressive in their name. There are some moderates, or at least some people who are running things, who are trying to make things a bit better, but we have to push them to do that. One of the things I don't like in the corporate news media is this pushing of moderates. You know, that kind of stuff is not good, because moderate to me equals Republican, from old school Republican, but that's a whole nother story. This Build Back Better agenda was very important, is very important, and it's bills plural, as President Biden said, and I had spoken about it as if it was one bill. These two bills are together. Infrastructure and Build Back Better. And these are going to make a difference when they get passed. The House Committee on the Budget Committee in the House of Representatives is doing markups today. And I will be doing the next episode tomorrow about the markups and about some of the things that have been going on there. But this is going to get passed, or I certainly hope it gets passed, and passed very soon, because this is very important. We've not had anything done about infrastructure at all, and we've got to get it done. The voting rights has to get done as well. It just has to get done. Otherwise, we're going to have a situation where the elections next year, 2022, and the elections in 2024 are going to be absolutely whitewashed. They're going to be whitewashed in favor of Republicans. And that is not a good thing. We need to have free, F-R-E-E, and fair, F-A-I-R, elections. We cannot be the kind of nation we've been for so long. We cannot continue to be that. Where we claim that we're this wonderful, massively brilliant place, and then we are having black folk out here on lines for 15 hours. We're having poor white people on lines for 10 hours, 7 hours. We can't have that. Brown people waiting on lines for 10, 12 hours. That's not anything special and great about us. It reveals the truth about us. While you've got these fairly well-to-do, everyday white persons going into white towns like Madison, Wisconsin, and walking in and out of there in 15 minutes and voting. In and out, in and out, in and out. Boom, done. Seriously. Sorry. Seriously, done. I'm done. In, out, in, out. Shake it all about. I'm done. No. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. No, no, no. Come on. Now, now, seriously now. In all seriousness. Really, I mean, it is literally, it is like 15 minutes and done. They go in there and they vote and they're out. They're finished. Seriously. This happened in Madison, Wisconsin in 2020. There have been a number of journals, I forget which one it was, that detailed this while the denizens of Milwaukee, the predominantly black city in Wisconsin, that there are them city, had black folk waiting for hours and hours to vote in the 2020 general election. I'm not even talking about what happened that April of that year, where in the primary you had a gazillion people on lines that stretched forever, longer than the Star Wars lines from 1977. I mean, I remember those lines really clearly. My goodness, in England, those lines just kept going and going. Had to actually come back another day to see the movie. That's how long those lines were. And these lines in Milwaukee in the April 2020 primaries were even longer than that. And then you had the iconic photo of a woman holding up a sign that said, "This is ridiculous." Because it is. And that's what's going on in the country. And this Build Back Better bill, these two bills, I think will try to put a stop to things like that. Although, again, the voting rights, this is such an important thing. The voting rights effort is so important. And I don't remember if Chuck Schumer, by the way, brought up a vote for the Voting Rights Act again. Remember, this Voting Rights Act that got shouted down, basically, by the Republicans in the Senate last week or the week before, is a watered-down version of the John Lewis Voting Rights and Restoration Act. It's not the same thing. And the Republicans shouted down the weak version of the John Lewis Voting Rights Restoration Act. Just think about that. This so-called bipartisanship. It's just a nightmare. It doesn't mean anything. As like I say, bipartisanship in my mind, dear listener, is all about consolidation of power and preserving a system. Yeah, I know that sounds awfully cynical, but that is really how I view this. Bipartisanship is an empty word. It means nothing. And when you're so concerned about being bipartisan and not concerned enough about doing the things for the United States, the people of the country, then there's a problem. You've got to be more concerned about getting things done rather than about, ooh, let's put a nice bow on it with a blue and a red ribbon together. That's nice. Ooh, how pretty. Oh, so pretty. That doesn't mean a darn thing to the millions of people who are starving, who can't afford a meal. I talked about this yesterday. I don't see how we can get all hung up on, or all enmeshed in, better word, bipartisanship. When people are hungry out here, when people don't have a roof over their head out here, when people are on food bank lines out here, when people are getting COVID out here, I don't see where. And people don't have health care. You can't be sitting here about wondering, being more concerned about it being a blue ribbon and red ribbon panel of Democrats and Republicans together. That, to me, is a waste of blooming time. You've seen what Republicans think of bipartisanship. They shut down debate on everything, and they're in the minority. If they get this majority next year, good night. That's why I keep saying, dear listener, we have to vote, and we have to spread the word of awareness and education about being able to vote, about understanding what it is your state requires when it comes to voting. You have to be doing this all like now. We all have to. And you have to pass the information on, because it's no good just sitting and listening to something and not passing it on to people who you can help. So I think that President Biden's speech, which I think will get largely overlooked, as it typically does, whenever Democrats do something, it gets completely buried in the corporate news media for the most part. And it gets eclipsed by some focus on some screaming Republican talking lies and some scandalized headline. Ooh, is somebody going to forget to clean their underwear today? Ooh, details at 11. That's the kind of garbage that we deal with in this country. I don't think we deserve this as an American public or any public. Wherever you are in the world, you don't deserve a media like that. What detergent do they use to clean their underwear with? I mean, that's the freaking focus on some of the... That's why I've stopped watching this stuff. But that's what they were doing when I used to watch it. Ooh, what kind of washing up liquid are they using for their freaking... Come on. God. Are they using Tide? Are they using... for their what detergent? What are they using? Tide or Persil? Are they using Blimmin'... This is what happens. While people are starving. This is the approach that the corporate news media is taking. And it's not good. For anybody, but of course those who control the corporate news media, who own it, depending on which media company it is, because they make millions and millions of dollars or pounds through advertisers and all kinds of things, because this is the kind of gutter filth that they think that you as a public need to be exposed to. Titillation and nonsense. And when you fill up a population's head with all of that, you are doing your darndest to miseducate and diseducate them. And when you have a public that is not educated, you can control them up the wazoo. You can even play puppeteer with them. It is as easy as 1, 2, 3. That's why I am going to continue to, as best I can, bring you the information of the day coming from government officials on state and federal levels here in the United States and beyond. Because information really is currency and it is the key to the 21st century. And we must continue to have an informed general public. And we won't have that if people are engaging in Mickey Mouse nonsense. That doesn't mean anything to the people. This speech by President Biden about Build Back Better is a very important one. It means something. So that's why I played that speech in its entirety. Very important speech. And it needs to be played and replayed, and you need to pass this on to people. Because you'll come to your voting booth next year and go, well, what do the Democrats do? And the answer is, it's right in front of you if you'd look. But again, most people don't have the time to look. I mean, I don't really have the time either to do all of this. But I make the time to do it. Because I do, I think, and it's not, I'm not the only one. I'm just speaking that that is what I do. And because I think it's important for us to really start to develop some knowledge about how politics works. The average person doesn't know. You know, dear listener, because you've been politically aware forever. But the average person beyond you listening to this podcast and obviously people similarly situated who listen to podcasts, who are people who vote consistently, who are aware of the things that are going on politically in your country, in your respective countries, the average person beyond the circle I've just described has no clue and is just trying to get through a day. And just trying to survive and get through the day intact in one piece. That is really the reality of countries across the globe, of people across the globe. But information is so important. It's so critical. And if you call yourself a so-called democracy, then information is something you must have. And that means you must have a better media, which means that if you don't have a better media, then you as a person have to start developing your own media or subscribe to media that actually is giving you real news. Because without that, we got nothing. And then it's all over. Build back better. I like it. I like it. I like what President Biden had to say. It's very important, as I keep saying. I think that they're obviously, like with everything else, there is room to move even further. And I think there should be subsequent efforts to push forward the legislation and make sure it does go through. As I said, the committee and the House of Representatives, the budget committee is doing its markups, which means it is itemizing and analyzing the bill, discussing the bills, everything. And I'm going to, at some point in the near future, said maybe it's tomorrow's episode, I'm going to get into some of that because I think that's important to know how government works and government inaction. Because there is a movement by Republicans in the United States to completely dismantle everything and to not have education be properly financed, to not have it taught, to not have the history of the country taught to them, and to celebrate people like Rush friggin' Limbaugh, who is a drug addict, a drug dealer, and a racist and a misogynist and a pig. So that's what you, when you know you, the jig is up, in this country, when you've got states going, oh, let's have Rush Limbaugh Day. Let's have Rush Limbaugh textbooks talking about how pathetic he is. I mean, it's just crazy. We have to start waking up here and acting up and doing the things to secure a future that our children and our children's children can actually thrive in. Not surviving, thriving. And you're already seeing younger generations take this upon themselves to do. And we must support them in that endeavor. We must leave this world in the hands of people who care about it and leave this world in a better place than we found it in. Obviously now with climate crisis and climate emergency, that is a very daunting challenge. But that doesn't mean that we just throw our hands up and give up. Build Back Better is but one step on this road to the recovery and the re-entry of the United States onto the world stage. Because right now, we are nowhere close to it. And like everything else, I think President Biden and the Biden administration are going to be able to bring credibility back to the United States. And I think they will be able to do it, certainly in this first 4 years. And because of all the damage that the Republicans have done to this country, especially over the last 4 years and even beyond, there is going to need to be at least another Biden-Harris term to fix this and get the United States and its people back where they should be and treat them humanely. That is our challenge. That is our focus. And we must all be engaged in that fight ahead together. Call your local politician. Ask them what they're doing about these issues. Make demands. Organize. Call federal and local officials, state officials. Call your congressperson, call your senator, your two senators. These are our opportunities at 202-225-3121. Call your senator or call your two senators and your House member. Please call them. Ask them what they're doing with Build Back Better. What's their vote going to be? Where do they stand on Build Back Better? This is important. We have got to start pushing and make this happen. You had a Republican Party who did not want to even raise the debt ceiling limit. It took weeks of negotiation just to get these Republicans to do that. They're in the minority. That's why we've got to get rid of this awful filibuster as well, by the way. And get rid of this blooming electoral college, which really does keep a system as pernicious as this one in place for the very few who created it. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.